Continue reading from the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 11, calculation of time from the atom. Text number 5. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The divisions of gross time is calculated as follows. Two atoms make one double atom, and three double atoms make one hexatom. This hexatom is visible in the sunshine, which enters through the holes of a window screen. One can clearly see that the hexatom goes up towards the sky. Repeat the translation. The division of gross time, is calculated as follows. Two atoms, make one double atom. And three double atoms make one hexatom. This hexatom is visible in the sunshine, which enters through the holes of a window screen. One can clearly see that the hexatom goes up towards the sky. Purport. The atom is described as an invisible particle. But when six such atoms, that means three of the three double atoms, when six such atoms combine together, they are called a trasarinu, or hexatom. And this is visible in the sunshine pouring through the holes of a window screen. We've all seen that, right? And the sun rays are coming through, you can see that they look like dust. This is the one, each one of those little specks is a hexatom. So, I'm not a scientist, nor am I a great orator, like His Grace Devamita Swami. So, this chapter is titled Calculation of Time from the Atom. So it is such a fine, sophisticated measurement of time. There are many different ways time is measured. We, in the West, we measure time. What is it called? Standard time, by the movements of the sun. And we come up with, seconds, minutes, days, weeks, months, years. And maybe a couple bigger measurements of time. But Srimad Bhagavatam gives us such a fine measurement of time, so precise. And all the planets, it is said, are moving all in perfect time. They don't deviate any from their orbit. It is said that if our planet were to just deviate slightly to one side, burn up if you go a little too close to the sun. too much away, freeze. So exact measurement is there by time. And of course the complete, the duration of the universe with all its complex manifestations of planets and all of them together, one universe, there is a measurement of that duration also. Big, a grand measurement of time. We hear of yugas and so a different and completely different type of measurement. There's Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga and Kali Yuga, and each of them has a specific measurement of time. And then there is more than those four. So, by learning of these things, one can realize what his position is. We are Anu means very small, insignificant. We are Anu and Krishna is Vibhu. He's very great. So how can we understand the great? Only by his, if he wants us to understand. The finite cannot understand the infinite unless the infinite wants him to or allows him to. And for this purpose, therefore, the guru or the guide is required. The spiritual master is the representative of the Supreme. And he can guide us to Krishna. We are here in the material world, obviously. And it is not our home. We try to make it home here. Everyone, you can see even the animals are trying to make homes. And human beings also are a great endeavor, working very, very hard to set up a home. But no one knows how long we'll be able to stay at home. It's a temporary affair. So Krishna, very kindly, he comes to this world, speaks Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of everyone. And he asks everyone to surrender to him, and their miseries will end, and they can come to his abode and enjoy eternally happy life. But who is interested in that? We become attached to most, we become attached to suffering, is really what it is. We take suffering as enjoyment and we won't give it up. It is said that once Lord Indra was cursed to become a pig, right? A hog, because he had offended someone. He has a habit of doing that. And time was ready, Lord Brahma came to tell him, okay, come now, you can come back to your post in the heavenly planets. And he was, said, but I have my wife here and so many piglets to look after and so much nice stew to eat. He was completely covered over that by the illusory energy. And Brahma had to shock him, wake him up to go back. So we need shocking sometimes, because we get comfortable, complacent, and we think that here this is not so bad. This is our position. I remember many years ago, I was in Laguna Beach, Southern California. And that was considered a very nice place. In fact, at the time, it was voted the most desirable place to live in California, Laguna Beach. So when we first went there, people were coming, young people were coming to the temple, and one day there was a group of young men and women. They came to the temple out of curiosity, surfing and swimming, enjoying the sunny Southern California weather. So they came, and I sat to speak with them, and I began to tell them, like I'm saying here, how this material world is not our home, and it's suffering, and it's a miserable place. And one of the boys said to me, it's not so bad. He said, it's not so bad. I mean, you can be very happy here. Maybe in other places, but here, Laguna Beach, it's nice. So I told him, yeah, it's a little nicer than most places, but it's, how long can you stay here? Dukalayama Shashvatam, Krishna says. Even if you like it, you can't stay. You can't keep it. Because of time. Here we're talking a little bit about time. Time is a great time, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, time I am. Come, it destroys everything. Everything is destroyed. Empires have come and gone. Big buildings being erected, and in time, due course of time, they break down everything. So time is that no one can who can conquer time. Everyone is conquered by time in the material world. Whether it's a few days, a few weeks, a few years, but the time factor, everyone has to submit. So, the devotee, he knows how to use time. Utilize time. It is said in the Bhagavatam earlier, Ayur Harati Vaikusam, every rising and setting of the sun, time is killing us, it's taking away our life as we know it. as soon as you're born, you start to die by the influence of time. But it says, one who is engaged in glorifying the Supreme Lord, for him, time doesn't. Time is different. He can actually conquer over death, conquer over time. So, no one wants to die, but they're accepting it as if it's natural. But yet they're trying to do everything possible to stop it. But the devotee, he doesn't waste his time in that way, trying to fight with time. It's a losing battle. Rather, the devotee uses the time, his precious time. How precious is time? Srila Prabhupada would cite a verse. I'm not sure who. Where it comes from, that if 1 second is gone, you can't buy it back with millions of gold coins. So time is precious. So what is the best way to use a time? The best way to use time is to serve Krishna, to hear about Krishna. Then you chant about Krishna, then you'll be inclined to serve Krishna more and more. And the great king Burkitt Maharaj, he was cursed to die in 7 days. And he was a great devotee of the Lord. He was actually protected by the Lord while in the womb, and so he was a good devotee, and when the curse was given, he actually could have counteracted it, so many Brahmins were serving him, assisting him, that, you know, if he had requested, they could have made a counter curse. They could have blocked it. But instead he said, no, this must be the will of Krishna. He didn't try to fight it. He didn't think there's so many things to be done in my kingdom. Prabhupada said that once there was a man in India on his deathbed, and the doctor told him his days are numbered, and he was begging the doctor, can't you give me a few more years? I have so many, my plans are not completed yet, I just need about 4 years and I'll get it right, but not even a second more. So the King Burkitt didn't think like that. And so many great kings we read about in Bhagavad, how they would walk away. They would walk away and devote themselves completely to serving the Lord, hearing the Lord. So that was Burkitt's example. He left the kingdom and went to the bank, Sacred River, where so many saintly persons have gathered, and describe it in 7 days. He has Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. One of those 7 days, we're going to. There's no escaping it. So, Sukhdev Goswami said, oh, this is a good, very good question. Because we are all also about to die. I remember once Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, and he said, Swamiji, I've noticed you only have young people around you in your movement. And it's true, it was like that. Right? Prabhupada came to America, and who came forward to inquire further and to join because of young people. So the reporter said, I don't see any old people. And Prabhupada said, what do you mean by old? And he said, people who are approaching death, those who are about to die. So Prabhupada said, so you're not about to die also? So you're also old. So we are all old. About to die. It's true, as I became a little more acquainted with the devotees, I noticed that they were all young, and the only old person was Srila Prabhupada. I was curious about that, and the more I talked with them, they spoke so affectionately, so lovingly about Srila Prabhupada. And I had never experienced that, I had never seen that. So I was thinking, what do these young Americans see in this old Indian man? And I wanted to taste what they were experiencing. So the devotees were kind enough to help me begin to appreciate Srila Prabhupada and what he was given. And the more you knew of him, the more you the attraction developed. So, time. How we use our time as devotees is most important. Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, said a devotee tries to see that not a second is wasted, always using his time in Krishna service. And we can serve Krishna in so many varieties of ways. But we should look to see that we are, everything we are doing is connected to Krishna. Prabhupada gave us so many avenues of serving Krishna. You can work for Krishna in many ways. And that is the perfection of our life. As we chant, as we take to the chanting of Hare Krishna more and more, and refine the quality of our chanting by paying more attention, then everything becomes clear. So, as I said, I'm not a great speaker, I'm not a scientist. What else to say about time? It hasn't been said that before. But perhaps some of you can give some comments. Any comments or questions?
Can you share some of your
have much, because, you know, I came in late, you could say. 73 was late. I realized it when I joined that I'm late, I wasted time. If I had come the first time, I saw them. But I couldn't. How could I? I didn't know anything. So it took a little time. But I can share. After I had joined, and I was a brahmachari at that time, this would be now the second time that I would see Srila Prabhupada. First time when I saw Srila Prabhupada, I was still living outside, and just coming. And then I came to the Sunday feast. I would come a little early so that I could spend time talking with the devotees, bringing up all my questions, and, you know, all my doubts. And they always were able to satisfy me. And so this time Prabhupada came, and when I arrived at the temple, the devotees were very busy cleaning like crazy. They were washing the windows inside and outside, washing the steps outside, the sidewalk. And I said, "What's going on? What are you doing all this for?" And they said, "Oh, you don't know. Prabhupada's at the airport. He's coming." So I was, I thought, wow, finally I'll get a chance. So I placed myself in the temple room right close to his Vyasa-san. Before he arrived, I just sat down, just like right there, so I could hear everything that he had to say. And he came, and it was, as I said, he spoke with such an urgency that I knew I had to join. I had to wind up my affairs. So then, the second time, I was already in the temple. That was like the following year, and everyone was getting ready to go to the airport to greet Srila Prabhupada. As some of you know, in those days, this was long before 9/11, so there was no security. The devotees used to, it was a festival that would take place in the airport, because the devotees would bring them a big basket of flowers, petals, like we have, and all the devotees would go with instruments and flower petals, and you'd go right all the way up to the gate where Prabhupada comes through into the airport. And they would, as soon as he was sighted, the kirtan would begin and litter the pathway all the way to the curb with flower petals, and leave it for the people to clean up. The first time I saw that, I thought, they must really like us. Anyway, on this second time, Srila Prabhupada was coming, and I knew what it was going to be like at the airport, so I was very excited to go, and that was like, waiting a whole year for him to come. Everyone was filled with anticipation, excited, the love of their life, he's coming again. And then the temple president came to me and said, "I want you to stay back." And I thought, "Hey, you gotta be kidding." He said, "Someone has to stay back to guard the temple. Vajari would be there. Vajari was Shilavati, Mother Shilavati. She was a little older late at the time. And he said, we need somebody to stay in the temple room and guard the deities because our neighbors were a little hostile in Brooklyn. Sometimes they would throw things in the temple room and, you know, from outside, and you know, they would harass the devotees when they were going for walking and going to go out to Sankirtan. They were inimical. One time they even charged, a group of them charged into the temple room. But the devotees give them a good thrashing. After that, they stopped bothering us. But this time, it was probably before, so some president said, no, we need somebody to stay back, and you should stay back. And I was, no matter how I pleaded with him to go, he was firm. So, for the next half hour, before everybody left, my mind was reeling. I was like, well, how could he ask me to stay back? Why me? Doesn't he know how much I wanted to go out there? And I even thought about, maybe I'll just go anyway. I'll wait till the last car is leaving and run out and jump in, and he won't see me coming. The president. But then I began to think, what if I go and something does happen? Like, what if the rascal neighbors, while we're gone, they can see everybody's gone. What if they did something stupid, like come and desecrate the temple? And what if, when they got back and Prabhupada saw it, and he asked the president, why did you leave somebody to watch? And the president would say, I did. He said, who? So when I thought like that, I thought, oh, then I realized I can't go, I have to stay. So I surrendered and I stayed and stayed in the temple room and chant japa and waited. So when the Prabhupada comes, just make sure I put on the Govindam tape, singing. So I spent the time doing that, just wait to chant and japa waiting. Now what happened was, because Prabhupada would walk straight out to the curb, sidewalk, and his car would come and pick him. Naturally, his car would get to the temple first, at least maybe 10 minutes before the other devotees, because they then would have to run and find their cars parked in the parking lot at the airport, which was, you know. And so I wasn't even thinking of that. But then, all of a sudden, while I was in temple, the door opened, and in walked Srila Prabhupada alone. And I hit the deck, paid my business, and got put on the tape, and then Prabhupada came and he walked to darshan and deities, and then he walked straight to his Vyasasana and sat down. He didn't say a word, but he alone, I was thinking, where's everybody else? Well, the devotees who were in the car with him was like the president, maybe the vice president, a couple of visiting sannyasis who, whenever Prabhupada came anywhere, at least in America, the sannyasis from all over the place would converge. They'd all come there. So there was some sannyasis in the car. So there's like four people. Four devotees, but they all went into the hustling Sacramento. And then the president looked at me and said, "Chant," you know. So I started to sing Sri Guru Charanapadma. And it's only Prabhupada and Vyasa-san. One devotee is doing arati, someone's washing his feet, someone's drying his feet, someone's fanning him at a time. And I'm singing Sri Guru Charanapadma, and Prabhupada, I'm looking at him, and he's responding to me singing. And that was like, that was as good as it gets. He's responding and I'm singing. I'm very reverential, and still no sign of the devotees. So it's a very mellow, soft kirtan, because everyone else is engaged, and Prabhupada is just patiently getting his feet washed and arti's feet, and I'm singing and he's responding. And then just as we got to the end, Ibejas Gushu Tribhuvan, suddenly you heard screeching outside, because the way the temple was, you could go down the steps to the sidewalk, you know. So you could hear all the cars screeching and all the boys come racing into the temple room, right at the end of, you know. And they had all the other madangas and kartas, so they all came and joined in, and then it became a big kirtan. And afterwards, I went back to the ashram, and I was thinking, "Wow, if I had, you know, run away and, you know, not do my duty to stay, that's what I was asked to do." If I had disobeyed and gone, I would have never gotten this opportunity, right? To be like, to chant like that with Prabhupada. And the whole meditation of it, the whole, you know, just looking at him, he's looking at me and responding, singing along. I thought, I would have never gotten that. So I learned a lesson that day. Duty, whatever you ask to do, it's, you know, we are meant to cooperate for Srila Prabhupada's and for Krishna's pleasure. And someone has the task of telling you what to do, and you have the task of doing what you're asked to do. So I felt that this was a direct reciprocation from Srila Prabhupada. I didn't have that much of a personal association. Maybe there was three or four times after that. Because, as I said, when Prabhupada came to the temples, so many sannyasis would come, and the temple authorities would tell us, "Don't go on the morning walk." I wanted to go on a morning walk. They said nobody should come on a morning walk. You know, they wanted Prabhupada to have a pleasant. They didn't want to have a mob going along with him. You know. So I think I went on one morning walk because by the grace of Yadubar. This time I was in L.A., Los Angeles. I moved from New York to escape the cold. I went to California. And Prabhupada came, and while he was there, he had a bar. One morning, we were chatting, and he said, "Oh, he has to go now, because Prabhupada's going to be going to the morning walk." And the other bar and his wife, Vishaka, they pass. They're like the paparazzi. They can go anywhere. If Prabhupada was to take pictures of them. So I was telling him, you're so fortunate you get into go every time. I've never been. And the other one said, oh, you come with us. You can use our pass. So I said, okay. And when we arrived on the beach, this was Venice Beach in California, of course, the temple president saw me and he came over to me and said, what are you doing here? I said, nothing, I just wanted to go along, you know. I mean, after all, Prabhupada's my spiritual master too. So he just looked at me and like, okay, don't do it again. So, and on that walk, of course, I just wanted to be there just to hear. Other devotees were more, you know, they felt comfortable to ask Prabhupada questions and so on. I didn't feel so comfortable, so I was happy just to listen to the questions and answers of Prabhupada would give. It was always a, you know, wonderful. So that was my only experience of a morning walk. And one time on that same visit, I was running the kitchen at that time, head of the kitchen, and when Prabhupada arrived, he asked Rameshwar Prabhu if he had heard from Jamuna. And Jamuna at that time was living up in Oregon on a farm, her and Dina Tarangit. So Rameshwar told Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada asked, how is she doing? And he said, she's doing really well, you know. And he told her where she was. So then Rameshwar thought, well, Prabhupada must want to see her. He's asking about it, and it's on his, she's on his mind. And so he called Jamuna and told her to come down and said, why don't you come down and cook for Prabhupada? Because he asked about you. So she came and brought her deities with her. And when they arrived, she was dressed in white, her and Dina Tarni. They had, up until that time, I think no other women in the movement were dressing in white. They had done so on their own. And they entered the garden. Srila Prabhupada has a nice garden that they maintain in New Dwarka. And when they both walked in, Prabhupada was, you know, given a darshan, speaking. There were guests up there and everything. And they paid their obeisances. And when they stood up, Prabhupada looked at them very affectionately and he smiled and he said, oh, white in white, very nice. And just by him approving like that, the next day, like a whiter shade of pale. Many, many women, maybe 15 or 20 of them, put on the white dress. They're widows. Either some of them, husbands had taken sannyas, you know. But at that time, they were just dressing in colorful saris like everybody else, so you didn't know who was a widow and what. You know, Chadarani was there. You know, there were other people. But the next day, because when they heard how Prabhupada had approved of Jamuna, then they all put on white. And that was it became institutionalized. So anyway, Prabhupada was like very, I got a chance to to a, he, on his last visit to LA, he went to visit the Golden Avatar Studios, and he recorded, he was asked to record one bhajan, and he sang Gauranga Dutipada, very, very nicely. Prabhupada was so, always Krishna conscious that, you know, he said, okay, and he sat down and asked Gaudiya Harmonium, and immediately starts. He was all ready. And he, and he sat down to play. He wanted to, he began to play in a, what do you call it, dotal, you know, like 1-2. And at that time, I don't think anybody in the movement was, knew how to play one in that beat. It wasn't popular. We all could do 1-2-3, 1-2-3. 1-2 was a challenge. So Prabhupada started, and he started counting from different, a few different devotees tried to accompany him, and it just wasn't happening. You know, he would sit, and they couldn't do it. So he said, ah. He was like, you could tell he was, it's not happening. So the Krishnakanti told him, the Prabhupada, come back tomorrow and, you know, try and then try to arrange somebody. So Prabhupada said, okay. And he left. And the next day he came back. All those devotees who were trying to play the drum didn't come back. I think you know where this is going. Actually, no. So Prabhupada sat down, and you know, he was ready to do it again. So then he started playing the harmonium, and I noticed this time he was playing it in 1-2-3. If he had done that the day before, anybody could have accompanied him. Today he decided to sing it 1-2-3. I just shook my head. It was, and he said, actually, before he began, Krishnakanti told him, Prabhupada, we could record you playing the harmonium, and afterwards we can also record you dubbing in the Gunga. You can accompany yourself. And Prabhupada had done that actually many times in the past. There are many vintage recordings of Prabhupada playing Madanga and harmonium and singing. So he said, okay. So it was decided that he alone would play and sing, and then he would go back over. And he did it, and that was like one of my cherished desires. I wanted to see Prabhupada play the harmonium. Because I would listen to his bhajans very, you know, closely, and would be amazed at what he was doing and how his playing and his singing was so he was so together. So I wanted to see that, so I got the opportunity to see it. We were in the control room and we watched Prabhupada as he sang Gauranga Dutipada. And there was a little incident in the middle of the recording. One disciple, Prabhupada, was asked to sit in front of Prabhupada and hold his songbook. He had a little Bengali songbook, you know. And he just, his service, this boy was just supposed to sit there right in front of Prabhupada in the studio, and so Prabhupada could see the words. And we, the rest of us, were behind the glass, you know, in the soundproof room, with the controls. And this boy who was holding the book, it got to a point in the bhajan, Prabhupada needed the page to be turned. And the devotee who was holding the book, he was all over the place. His mind, he was like spacing out. And Prabhupada's playing, and Prabhupada's doing like this. To get him to turn the page. But he is not, he's right in front of me, but he's not seeing that. He's like, he's taken in the studio. And Prabhupada didn't miss a beat. Prabhupada's playing the harmonium, and he's like, doing little frills, you know, staying in key, staying in the melody. He's just playing. And it's like he goes. It's like if he drove around the block and he comes back. He like play through a verse, you know, just playing, no singing. And he comes back to the point where he needs to start singing the next verse. And this devotee is like, he's not there. And it probably did like twice. And we're in the control room, we're watching, and we like say, turn the page! But they can't hear us. It's soundproof, you know, for recording purposes. So eventually, he came back to earth. You know? And he saw Prabhupada doing like this. And he said, oh! Turned the page quick, and then Prabhupada just went right into it. So smooth that if you listen to it, you would never know that happened. You would think that Prabhupada was just playing purposefully. But he was doing that because he wasn't seeing his head to turn the page. But Prabhupada kept everything in time, you know, his playing, and there's no madanga, there's no kartals, nothing. And when it was finished, he said, okay, Prabhupada, you ready to do the madanga? And he said, yes. And so I brought him the madanga, and the madanga was very high, the big end, the big side, because, you know, the climate, the madanga, this leather can get tight or slack. So, you know, if it's damp, it'll go very low. And if it's hot and dry, it gets so tight that it doesn't sound like it sounds like a pan. You know, instead of boom, it'll be pang. You know? So Prabhupada hit it and he realized you don't want to play it like that. So and I was standing there just waiting, and he said, bring me some water. So I didn't know what he was going to do with the water. I told him he wanted water to drink. So I went to the cooler and got him a glass of water. And he took his finger and dipped in it, and I'm just like curious, what is he going to do with it? And he saw that I was watching, and he said, not too much. And he began to rub water along the, you know, the black part, that's called a gaba. Between that and the rim, there's just the skin of the leather, the raw leather. And he rubbed water there a few times around, and then he pushed in on the drum and hit it. And he would do that a few times, and every time he would press and then hit it, you could hear the pitch coming down. He was so expert that he just brought the madanga down to the perfect pitch that he wants to play. And he said, okay. And Krishna Gandhi said, do you want to hear what you did before? You know, you singing, so you could know what to do. I said, no. This is a start. So they gave him the headphones, and Prabhupada just sat down and played perfectly, accompanying himself. I thought, wow. He was was so expert at everything. And this was a real nice example of him, how he played that. And then when he was finished, Krishnakanti asked him, Prabhupada, we'd like to get, if you would do a chant Hare Krishna, a little Hare Krishna bhajan. He said, we have some, but they're old. We'd like to get another one, a new one. So I said, okay. And then he took off the madanga, he had him in her down bed, and he said, kartals. So he was going to play kartals, and guess who gets to play madanga? And Prabhupada took the kartals, and he just started chanting. Vande Hum. Krishna Chaitanya, and then when it was Hare Krishna, I got to play madanga in the studio. And later on, the Krishnakanti added a chorus of devotees chanting and responding. So that was a little treat. It was a small thing, but for me it was a big thing. any little time spent Prabhupada, just any little service would give the devotees so much pleasure. And there's one more thing I can tell you. Because these things you won't find in the what you call Lilamrita. You know, there's hundreds, maybe thousands more little things of devotees experiencing with Prabhupada that didn't make the cut. But one time I think that was the last time he came to LA in 1976, we went, this time I got to go out to the airport to greet him. Didn't tell me to stay back, rather he asked me to lead the kirtan when we get out there. So I was thinking about it before, you know, that was my thoughts. I was thinking, well, how shall I chant? How shall I, you know, for Prabhupada? I was thinking like that. I was thinking, how shall I chant? What would be pleasing to Prabhupada? And all the way to the airport, I kept thinking about that and wondering, what melody should I sing? I know so many melodies, but what melody should I sing? And then it came to me that I remembered when I was in New York in the early days, that one devotee had told me there was one melody that we always would sing on Harinam in those days. There weren't many melodies at that time. Just a few melodies we would sing. And we would chant all day on Harinam. From, you know, 9 in the morning to 6 at night. And later on Friday and Saturdays. But one devotee had told me that this particular melody was one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's favorite melodies. I don't know how he knew that, but maybe it was something that Prabhupada said or something, I don't know. And I didn't doubt it, I just accepted it, you know. So, and we used to chant that, and then suddenly in LA now I remembered this devotee had said that this is one of Bhaktisiddhanta's. So I didn't know what was Prabhupada's favorite melody, but I thought, well, if this is one of his spiritual master's favorite melodies, then he would like that. So I decided that's what I'm going to sing. So Prabhupada came through the door and we started the kirtan singing with his pranam mantras. And by the time Prabhupada got, you know, he's coming and he reached me, then we would then get behind him. All the devotees would get behind, and as, you know, so it would be like a parade with Prabhupada in the front with all the sannyasis and all the rest of the devotees behind. And we would walk out and leave the petals for the airport employees to clean. So as Prabhupada got right by the side there, you know, I was already chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And then as you think, we got behind him. And that's, and he's walking with his cane, and somebody's holding an umbrella. And it's a happy day. Happy day, you know. Oh, happy day. Happy time. And so as we got behind him now, I went into the Hare Krishna mantra. And as I said, I was really consciously thinking, wanting to please Prabhupada. And by, as I finished this, by the time I finished that, singing the mantra just one time, Prabhupada stopped. And this came and he turned around, and, you know, and I'm right behind him, just a couple of feet. So he stopped and he looked directly at me and he said, "Come on." And I had the, whew, the kirtan took off from there. And I remember Dhanavir Prabhu ran over to me and said, "Did you see that?" I said, "Of course." I was right behind him. And you know, he was doing it for me. So that was just one little incident, but I thought, so you can please the spiritual master in so many ways, in simple, small ways, it's insignificant. But it made my day, you know. And I, since that time, I've always, whenever I chant, I always try to think of it as a service. My chanting has always been as a service to Prabhupada. I wasn't chanting for to become famous, but some fame came, right? But really, I would always try to chant for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. And one last thing I could say, when I, let's see, I went, I was in New York, it's before LA, and we heard that Prabhupada was coming to Philadelphia for the Ratiyatri Festival. So this must have been 74. And at that time I was not second initiated, only first. And but Prabhupada was coming to Philadelphia for the Ratiyatri, and it was decided that the whole temple was going to go for the Ratiyatri Festival. And the same temple president came to me and said, "Okay, you're going to have to stay back." And I thought, what does he have against me? But it wasn't like that. That's not what he was saying, that the following day, Srila Prabhupada would be giving initiations in Philadelphia. And at that time, second initiation. So he said, myself and another devotee, another brahmachari, two of us would have to stay back, and we won't go to the Ratiyatra. Everybody else would go, except Bajari and two of us. And that devotee, he had an aspiration to get into deity worship. I mean, he was really serious about wanting to worship. He also was not second initiated. So the president told us, you two stay back, he will assist the pujari, and I would cook. At that time I was also running the kitchen, even though I wasn't a second initiated. It's just circumstances at the time, you know. So we said, okay, I didn't mind waiting back because I knew I'd get the next day. So he said the devotees would leave the next morning, like early in the morning, they wouldn't stay. So as soon as the first car comes back to New York, we would then jump in that car and ride straight to Philly. So we made it there just in time for greeting the deities. And something happened at the time, not involving me, but I witnessed it. And that was when it was Srimad Bhagavatam class. Prabhupada was going to speak on the sixth canto of Ajamil. And at that time, we didn't have the sixth canto. Prabhupada was working on it, he was translating it, and Prabhupada had a little entourage, his servant, his secretary, and someone to assist him with the translation work. Usually it was Pradyumna or this volume, Nitai. So it just so happened it was Nitai at that time. So he had the transcripts of the, and these were new, this hot off the Prabhupada, he's translating it, and this devotee would then transcribe it from the cassette, the tape, and he would have those manuscripts. So from that, he wrote the verse on the board, and we all got to chant in response. And the last time, Prabhupada said, okay, read the translation. So Nitai begins to read the translation, and the translation went something, it was a place where Jamil, upon seeing the Yamadutas, he became terrified. So Nitai said, Ajamil, on seeing the Yamadutas with their fearful features, he cried out for his son, Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. And we are hearing this for the first time. There is no book. So as he said it, Prabhupada's voice, Prabhupada took the microphone and said, did I say it three times? And we were all like, we don't know what's going on. And Nitai is silent. His head is bowed and he's silent, and Prabhupada said it again. Did I say three times? No answer. Prabhupada said, I did not say three times. Did I say three times? And then Nitai says, no, sure, Prabhupada. Nitai had taken it upon himself, like it maybe for emphasis. And he added those extra Narayans to Narayan. The Prabhupada said, I did not say three times. And he said, why three times? Once is sufficient. And when Prabhupada said that, once is sufficient, it was like everybody in the temple room just went, Jai, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, went on to speak in that class, give a lot, so much insights on chanting. And that whole Ajamil episode, there's so much about the chanting, so Prabhupada said, why three times? Once is sufficient. And that little statement, it just hit everybody who was there. And then very, very gently, Prabhupada scolded Nitai. And I observed he was very gentle about it. He could have blasted him and blew him away, but he didn't. He was such a compassionate person. So he just said, don't change what I have spoken. And then went on with the Bhagavatam class. So that was a, as I said, that just that one line, once is sufficient. You know, it meant a lot. It said a lot. That once, and there are many statements in Shastra to back that up. That once chanting in the name of Krishna, purely, of course, says more sins than you can even commit can be eradicated. So, and I think Prabhupada also said that although Ajami was chanting for his son, he was really calling for his son because Prabhupada said he was accustomed to calling his son Narayan, please come here, Narayan, bring my slippers, Narayan, bring my prasad. He was, and this time when he saw the Yamadutas, he became so terrified. He said, Narayan, please come here. Just one time. And Prabhupada said, but because he chanted the name of Narayan at that time, said he remembered the real Narayan. Although he was calling his son, he remembered the real Narayan, and the real Narayan responded like, immediately, and sent the Vishnu Dutas, and that began a whole other episode because they came and stopped the Yamadutas from taking him away. So that's about all that I have to my experiences with Prabhupada. Lots more from many devotees who had opportunities. So this was just a couple little things, but they're precious little things.
Would you be kind enough to tell us which melody was that that Prabhupada liked?
Yeah, I'll sing it. Welcome to Madanga. Where's the Madanga Wala? You all know this melody. This is the story behind it. Hare Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Bhagavatam